Karen Middleton has a very busy agenda today. Kia ora and welcome, Karen.
Good morning to you, Catherine.
Now, for starters, some more freedoms in Sydney. And what has changed now? You've reached a critical point.
Yeah, woohoo! Sydney is celebrating. Let's hope it doesn't all go bad in a couple of weeks when we get the picture of the transmission rates. But people are basically allowed to do a lot more now than they have been under the last 4 months of lockdown in Sydney. So retail is reopening. People can go to their local restaurant or cafe or pub, as a lot of people seem to have done on Monday morning, and have a beer. Numbers of people you can have in your home have increased. There are still restrictions on wearing masks inside, although it's not as many restrictions as there have been in Sydney. So the rest of the country, I guess, is watching what happens in Sydney to see how it goes. But they've got a new premier there in the shape of Dominic Perrottet after the resignation a couple of weeks ago of Gladys Berejiklian. And he's been very enthusiastic about emphasising the economics rather than the health issues around this, and is pushing for people to get out and have fun, was his message. So certainly Sydney's been celebrating doing that in the last couple of days. Their caseloads in Sydney, the number of new cases of COVID-19 emerging every day, are falling, which is welcome news too. They're still in the hundreds, but they have fallen quite dramatically in the last week or so. So Sydney has got beyond 70% of the population aged over 16 that have, New South Wales has got beyond 70% of the population aged over 16 that have had at least a first dose of the vaccine, and are hoping to get, but I'm really jumbling today, Catherine, sorry.
That's all
have
fine.
Had two doses,
yeah.
Have had double doses. That was the trigger point, 70% double doses, and they're now hoping to get to 80% very quickly. Here in Canberra, we've actually gone to 96% of people who've had one dose, and getting past 70% have had two. So the government here is a bit more hesitant. We're reopening on Friday, but with a bit more hesitation, there'll still be restrictions on travel in the wider regions. There's concern that in further afield in New South Wales, the vaccination rates are not as high and that there's still concern about transmission. So it's a bit of a steady as she goes, and Melbourne is still locked down, but the case numbers have been falling from alarmingly high numbers in the up, getting close to 2,000 a day down to a little bit less than that now. So generally positive news, I think.
Yeah, and also I think tolerance is different depending on where you are and what you've been through. Tolerance for that opening up seems to be quite different as well. Well, it's the final sort of salt in the wound for Gladys Berejiklian, and I know a lot happened after we talked last time, and we did a big debrief last week with our correspondent on this, but the final salt of the wound that was having sort of carried the can of all this, they were so close to being at the point of lifting, and of course she's on her way. Look, let's keep going because you've got so much other interesting stuff here. What's happening in climate and the political stalemate there? It's such a particularly problematic part of your politics. What's happened of late?
Well, yeah, dare I sound, continue the optimism, but we may be on the brink of actually resolving this impasse that we have seen for more than a decade in Australia on climate policy. The Prime Minister is negotiating with his Nationals colleagues, with Barnaby Joyce, his Deputy Prime Minister, head of the Nationals, who are the Conservative, rurally based party here, on trying to reach agreement on a plan towards net zero emissions by 2050. Now, there are plenty of countries around the world that are now going beyond that kind of commitment and trying to do more, but Australia has balked at even agreeing to that commitment. The Prime Minister still hasn't said whether he's going to the Glasgow conference next month or not, and he can't really go if he doesn't have that nailed down. So this is a crucial week. Our federal cabinet is meeting today to sign off on the draft plan that the Liberal Party part of the government has come to for this net zero plan. And then it will go to the Nationals, and they will have a party room meeting on Sunday to try and see whether they will agree to this. They're still playing kind of hardball. They have changed their rhetoric a bit, but they're still emphasising the importance of not setting back the regions in terms of jobs and industry. So I think we are seeing movement, and that we now have big business right across the board pushing for some kind of a change. And of course, all the other political parties have been in favour of change for some time. So, it does feel like we're on the brink of something. We saw a bit of a indirect rebuke from none other than Prince Charles in the last 24 hours, who did a documentary that aired in the UK and was asked specifically about Scott Morrison's inclination not to go to Glasgow or hesitation, and Prince Charles expressed surprise and alarm and emphasised that they want leaders there because it's what he called a last chance saloon to get some kind of agreement. He's of course a known environmentalist. So things are moving in a positive direction in terms of climate action, but we've still got to see the detail of the plan and whether the Nationals will sign up to it.
Now, the corruption, this of course was what brought Gladys Berejiklian down eventually, given the behaviour of her former, I don't know what to call him, was he a boyfriend or a partner? That's never been clarified, because of course it was
it was
the other part of the scandal, was everyone was so surprised to learn of him. And in the most humiliating way, it all came out when he was being investigated for corruption and she had to reveal her association with him. So
that's right.
Now you've got this, is it ICAC, you've got this inquiry into whether she has any questions to answer, but there's yet another new corruption scandal brewing somewhere else.
Indeed. So we have around the country state-based and territory-based bodies that investigate corruption in public office. We don't have one federally, and that is a separate and ongoing argument about whether there should be a federal anti-corruption body. So, of course, all the goings-on in the states is fueling that debate nationally. You've summed up nicely what's happened in New South Wales. That partner was Darryl Maguire, a former MP. They had a secret relationship, he and Gladys Berejiklian, for 5 years. And as you say, she had to give evidence about it, and it was revealed. And now she is facing investigation of whether she did anything inappropriate, which she denies, of course, while she was in office in relation to, say, grant money that went to his electorate or anything, given that there was an undisclosed relationship. In Victoria, things have got much more heated this week. There's another anti-corruption commission in Victoria investigating the Labor Party at the state level there, and branch stacking allegations. So whether people were engaged in branch stacking, which has been admitted, and also whether the staff of MPs, both, well, particularly its focus is at the state level, were paid by the public purse, but were undertaking political activities. What we've seen this week is a federal Labor MP, Anthony Byrne, giving evidence about his state colleagues and himself and saying, in fact, yes, a branch stacking was engaged in. Yes, people were employed at taxpayers' expense to undertake what should have been political campaign work. Now, that is where the more problematic issue lies, because believe it or not, branch stacking is not actually unlawful, but it is against the political party's rules. So there may be disciplinary action taken against various people by the parties themselves. And indeed, there has been about the man he has most focused on, and his name is Adam Somurek. He had to resign his parliamentary positions, I think it was last year, over these allegations when they first emerged. And now Anthony Byrne has admitted he himself has been engaged in this practice as well. Now, he's a federal MP, and the jurisdiction of the Anti-Corruption Commission doesn't reach to the federal domain, but it's a question of whether he might face any further action by prosecutors over his admissions, whether his own political party will do anything about it. The federal opposition leader, Anthony Albanese, is now under some pressure to act, and it's an unwelcome attention on the grubby side of politics for the Labor side, when they've been celebrating, as politicians do, the travails of their opponents in New South Wales. So for the public watching on, I guess they throw their hands up in the air and say, when does this stop, this suggestion that people in public office can't do things in the way that they're expected to? Unedifying and ongoing, I'm afraid.
Now, of all the times to have a new airline arrive, you do.
We do. It's kind of weird, right? But there's an airline starting up in Australia next year called Bonza Airlines. I'm not sure about the name, but they're obviously confident about it. It's going to be a budget airline in the low-cost carrier market. So they're still negotiating with government with the regulators. They haven't got regulatory approval yet. They're owned by US investment firm 777 Partners, and they're targeting some of the lucrative regional markets in particular. So they're looking at where they might be able to land in Australia. They say they're going to be using Boeing 737 aircraft, so they need to target ports that will take those aircraft. But they're insisting some 45 regional ports around Australia could be a goer for this new airline called Bonza. We saw the demise of Tiger Air, which was a sort of lower strung budget airline in Australia through the early stages of the pandemic. We still have the likes of Virgin, Rex and Jetstar operating, Qantas's low budget wing operating in these markets here at the moment. So this will be an extra one if it gets the final tick off. Hopefully it'll do something for the airfare rates, which have been soaring now as a result of the pandemic. And people are pretty keen, like I'm sure they are in New Zealand, to be able to travel again, even within their own country. So it's interesting news. We'll see how sustainable it is. But optimistic, definitely.
Your champion. Thanks very much. Karen Middleton, our Australia correspondent, speaking to us from Canberra.